Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
So the question becomes, and I've had this discussion so many times over the last several years, this idea that there should be national education standards, that the Common Core, something we need. And look, I've got a lot of conservative friends who are opposed to Common Core because Obama did it. I've got a lot of conservatives who are against it because, hey, it's consolidation of government, and I don't want Washington telling my kids what they need to know. And I've got liberals who are against it because it takes away local control, takes away control of teachers, and all of that. So the question is this something we need? Is it a bad direction for an education system to be going? Well, here to answer some of those questions, I've asked Nicholas Tampeo. He is the professor of political science there at Fordham University. He's written a new piece on this. Nicholas, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, great. I'm delighted to be here.
So I go through this idea. Some say we need to have national standards so that all of us are on at least somewhat of a same plane. Some are saying this is government control. Where are you at on this?
Sure. Well, I'll explain how I came to this issue and then where I stand on it. So basically in 2012, I noticed that my son's kindergarten experience changed dramatically, and it went from a play-based model to one based where the teacher had to have the kids sit on a mat, and she would lecture at them. And basically, they removed a lot of the physical activities from the classroom, a lot of the exploration, a lot of touching acorns and learning about art, and now they were getting this very didactic mode of instruction. And I started to do research, and I got some notes from the other parents in the class, and I wrote a note to the principal saying, listen, you know, we don't like what's happening in the schools. Please stop it. So I got called to the principal's office, and she said, you know, we're doing this new thing. It's the Common Core. It's got at this point, you're probably familiar with, and the listeners are probably familiar with the selling points, right, that it's going to prepare all children for college and careers, which is, you know, an absurd statement if you ask my opinion for something that's never been tested. And then I just started to say, wait a minute, you know, these are my kids. And then I started looking for people around the country who are noticing something similar. And in 2012, the initial response was largely coming from conservatives. That's true. And, you know, I was in contact with people in Utah and Texas and California and some local people in my vicinity in Westchester, New York. So it started conservative, but at this point, it's totally this multifaceted movement that includes a lot of, like, there was a recent study from Columbia University on people who are refusing the test, and they're often coming from very liberal left side of the political spectrum, very well educated people. There's people upstate, downstate, urban, suburban, rural. And I guess just what I'm trying to do in my article is saying that the reason to protest is democracy, that the fact is that democracy is a way of life, and it's a way of life of ordinary people having a say in what happens to their shared affairs. And with the Common Core, you basically had the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funding the standards because there are laws against the federal government writing the standards. So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation paid for the writing of the standards. They paid all these groups to support it. And with the help of the Race to the Top program, and I would argue with the Every Student Succeed Act of 2015, they've pushed across the country this very narrow model of education that's almost impossible for ordinary people to change.
No, I'm with you.
So my critique of national education standards, yes, sure.
No, I'm absolutely with you. In fact, you know, we've opted our kids out of the standardized test here for the last couple of years, last four. And I'm on board with you. So the question then becomes, because it's always thrown back at me, well, if we don't have a standard, if we don't have a bar, so to speak, you know, then where are we educationally? What happens to our kids, especially when you're talking about poor urban areas who maybe not as much is expected of them?
Sure. Well, I think it's a legitimate question. And part of the reason I'm interested in this as a research project is because the left, for at least since Brown versus Board of Education, has looked to the federal government as the good guy in education. And now I think a lot of us are struggling what to do when they're the bad guys.
Right.
You know, I'm simplifying a little bit, but what happens when the federal government, you know, adopts some really bad ideas and says, hey, listen, we're doing it for the civil rights movement. And you're saying, well, wait a minute. You know, this is, these standards are used to justify the tests and are used to justify the tests that turn around urban school districts that creates chaos in public schools in inner city Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago. So the notion that this is like a panacea for people in urban communities, that's just factually incorrect, right? That the No Child Left Behind era, the Race to the Top era, I mean, it's not a silver bullet. It's not doing great things, and it's very expensive.
No, I'm with you. I mean, at the end of it,
it takes away from other opportunities. So the fact is, and you know, that, so people who support the standards will say, listen, we just have to stick with this debt. We have to double down, triple down, quadruple down, just keep putting money after it. And at a certain point, you have to say, listen, if you have local control, people can make mistakes. That's a real thing. But the federal government can also make mistakes.
Certainly.
So maybe it's time to give more local control a chance rather than just putting all of our eggs in the federal basket.
Yeah, I'm a local control guy myself. I mean, I don't want that kind of... In fact, I remember back when I was in high school back in the 80s, there was always a joke that, you know, in France, for instance, you know, the education minister could open up a book and say, you know, at this moment, every kid in the entire country is reading this sentence. And we used to say, you know, we're glad we don't live in that kind of an environment. It seems to me that we're moving towards that because I see with my kids... and I've got three kids in public school right now that, you know, their days are highly structured, especially in the kindergarten through those early years where you go, no, you need to have that kind of flexibility. You need to have kids who can get the wiggles out and do something.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And so, you know, one of the things that the reason I made this my new research focus is because, you know, there are people in Washington, D.C. who have, there's a think tank community, which is the Brookings Institution, the New America Foundation, the Learning Policy Institute, the New America Foundation. All of these groups are coordinating this plan to make it much closer to that French model. So, you know, the smart money has, as Hillary Rodham Clinton's Secretary of Education being Linda Darling Hammond. And if you read her book, The Flat World in Education, she says, we need a Ministry of Education. We need a national curriculum. I mean, she makes concessions to the reality that we're 50 states and there's a lot of disagreement. But as far as the ideal of everybody in the country turning the page at the same time, on my reading of The Flat World in Education, Linda Darling Hammond is okay with that. So, you know, and let's talk just a little bit more about the importance of kids getting their wiggles out or kids playing or kids exploring. I mean, it's not just about playing with blocks, and it's actually not even just learning about mathematical concepts or something like that. It's learning that you can change the world. And so when you change the school environment to where now school means obeying orders, and the more you obey orders, the more points you get, right? The more you provide evidence from the text and don't say your own thoughts, don't use synonyms, you know, the more you show your evidence for your math homework, even if you could solve the problem in a blink in your head. I mean, basically, it's every day in school right now, you're being taught compliance.
And, but isn't that how it's
so
been?
That's why I think there's so many.
But Nicholas, hasn't that kind of aspect been, you know, post World War II, where everything's in a neat row, and hasn't that always been part of it?
Well, you know, Yang Zhao is a professor at University of Oregon, and he's written some really brilliant books called like World Class Learners and Why China Has the Best and Worst Schools. And one of the things he said is that part of what made American education great for parts of the 20th century, like the middle parts of the 20th century when presumably you and I were both in school, was that the system was broken, right? That there was only a certain amount of hours in the day that the bureaucrats controlled.
Right.
And then there was time for football, debate team, school drama, arts and crafts,
Certainly.
Workshops. I mean, just all sorts of the things that made school exciting. I mean, that was the stuff that I remember. I mean, I could tell you tons about my debates on the debate team. Could I tell you about classes during that same period? Who knows? So the fact is that the system was broken, and that created all sorts of leeway for teachers and students to experiment a little bit. But part of what's going on with the education reform movement is you're trying to seal off the escape routes.
That's an excellent point.
You're really trying to take what makes the school really enchanting at its best, and you're removing that. So sometimes I think like ed reform is just sucking the spaces of joy out of school.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I think about all the extracurricular things I did in school and all of the things that were available. And I look at my kids going to school, a lot of those avenues, they're not there. And the ones that are, they make much more difficult. So the question that I have then, instead of, pursuing this direction, and look, if Hillary Clinton is elected president and this woman that you've pointed out becomes the Secretary of Education, there's a whole organizing campaign that needs to go on. So I think we should all be on something of a page on what our schools should look like in the direction we should be going. What are you advocating for?
Well, I mean, this is the challenge, is that there's a great book by this political scientist, Jesse H. Rose, at University of Massachusetts Amherst, called An Education in Politics. And what he says is that the reason No Child Left Behind passed is because it was a coalition of business groups and certain civil rights groups. Not all, but certain civil rights groups. So what happens is that you've got the business community and the Republican side, and you've got the civil rights groups plus the neoliberals in the Democratic Party, and they formed this coalition. And this coalition is what made possible Every Student Succeeds Act, right? Because everybody's like, oh, this Republican Congress is obstructing Obama. They were happy to work with Obama on the Every Student Succeeds Act, right? That it passed with a big majority. So the thing is, I don't think right now you can just say, we're going to get a progressive model of education across the country. Just we're nowhere near having the forces to pull that off. I think what you have to say is we're going to allow communities to say, we're going to say, the 10th Amendment says powers unenumerated by the state, by the Constitution belong to the states. And it's not because I believe in segregation or anything crazy like that. I mean, segregation should be handled by the Department of Justice. What you're saying is that the founders, basically, if you were to get Thomas Jefferson and the Anti-Federalists to go along with the Constitution, there had to be spaces of democracy.
Right.
And basically that school boards and local control are one of the best sites of democracy left in our country.
I'm with you.
There's going to be this push in the next few years to get rid of school boards, to get rid of elections, and just make it top down all the way, where principals and superintendents just become, they just do what they're told, and they just command people. There's no latitude or debate. So what I'm saying is that you have to let communities choose. That I think in 2016 and beyond, the chance of any community in America choosing a really whacked, crazy option, I don't think that's a realistic threat. I think the much more realistic threat is of a miserable homogeneity than a too radical diversity.
I'm with you, but here's the question that always seems to come up. What do you do with the areas? Because, look, I live in a neighborhood where I fully trust that my kid's going to get a decent education. The resources are going to be there because the citizens are engaged and all of that. What do you and I don't worry about the wealth class of this country, because they're always going to get the best for their kids. But what do you do with, some of the states and some of the areas of high poverty? And because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a big part of this, in my view, was you saw a lot of southern states who were graduating people who couldn't read or write, and you had their standards were far below. And you can say the same thing about some high poverty areas. And the idea, especially from the civil rights point of view, is how do we raise up the folks who aren't getting what they're supposed to somewhere near everybody else's? What do you do with those areas if we're not having some type of a national standard then?
Right. No, that's. I'm really glad you asked that. I mean, that's the strongest argument. And the fact is, if you allow freedom, it can be abused. right? And so the fact is that what I'm arguing for is freedom. I'm saying that let communities decide. I don't know if you were following the story of Dyett High School in Chicago, but the community wanted it to be a green technology school, and Rahm Emanuel wanted it to be an arts high school. And so basically he forced his way upon the community, right? So the fact is that top-down control can be corrupt, can be racist, can be classist, can be problematic, right? And so, you know, the fact is that top-down control hurts certain communities, right? And there's, you know, in Baltimore this past year, there was students protesting the PARC exam, which is one of the National Common Core exams, saying, you know, they were marching out of the PARC exam saying, this is what democracy looks like. And they're right, right? That's what democracy looks like. So, you know, I'm often asked, like, you know, what about creationists in Texas? Or what about, well, I don't know, that's a cost. That's pretty much the one I always get, is, you know, what about creationists in Texas? Well, first off, there's a Supreme Court case that says that you're not allowed to teach creationism in science class, right? But even if that Supreme Court case wasn't there, I'd say, you know what, let that battle take place at the local level, right? I mean, the fact is parents in Chicago want their kids to be educated. They don't want their kids to be stupid. I mean, it's not 1950s America anymore. I mean, a lot has changed. So I'm willing to take the risk and say, let's let communities have heated debates amongst themselves how best to educate their kids. And, that's it. I realize it's not, I don't have a silver bullet. I realize that certain kids could fall through the cracks, and I hate that. But it's not like they're not falling through the cracks right now or that there aren't bad consequences. I mean, you have to make a decision in the time and place you are. And right now, I think that national education standards have been a disaster and are going to continue to be a disaster.
Yeah, I'm with you. But at the end of it, there is no silver bullet. So I'm glad to hear that you don't have a silver bullet, because this is hard stuff and it's hard work. And just like democracy, we're talking about hard work. If you want to take a look at Nicholas's writing, the essay he has just put out, we'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Nicholas's name. It'll take you right there. Nicholas, I appreciate your thoughts. And I'd love to talk to you again on this at some point down the road.
That'd be great. There's a lot of interesting work done on other standards, and, you know, there's many other facets of this. So if you'd like to have me back, I'd be delighted.
Absolutely.
To be back on.
Great talking with you. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.
Smith Show.